Good evening, everyone. Welcome to what I gather is the 10th year of the Schwemm Lecture. I was talking with Paul Sorrentino, who's the chair of the Schwemm Committee. And for 10 years, the Schwemm Committee has been bringing to you people who are real paragons, real models of ethical behavior in business or the law. And tonight I'm very honored to introduce our speaker, Sungju Kim, who, as you will come to understand in her talk, is absolutely guided by ethical beliefs about how she conducts her business. As she will tell you tonight, and she's an enormously, enormously successful businesswoman, as she will tell you tonight, her goal is not to serve to succeed, but it's to succeed in order to serve. So think about that as a guiding principle. She's somebody who, I don't know if you're familiar with the expression true north, but oftentimes when I talk with students and they're trying to figure out what to do in life or what decision to make or how to behave, I ask them, which way is your moral compass pointing? Is your moral compass pointing true north? And Sungju Kim is an absolute example of somebody whose compass points true north. She's a graduate of the class of 1981, so for those of you who know your Amherst College history, what is significant about being a woman graduating in 1981? Who knows? Yes, tell us. First class of women. So she is a pioneer. And I'm before I bring her up, I'm going to tell a story about Sungju that helps you understand truly what a pioneer she is. So she wanted to come to Amherst College. She grew up in a rather traditional, conservative Korean family, and her father did not think it was appropriate for his daughter to go to Amherst College. She was not swayed, so she said, "What can I do to convince my father?" So she organized a dinner party of very prominent people in Korea, also including the Japanese ambassador, people who themselves were alumni of Amherst College or held the college in high regard. So she organized this dinner party, invited people over to her home where her father lived, and her father comes home and discovers that there are all these guests around the dinner table, people whom he deeply respects. And each and every one of them basically with the same message: let your daughter go to Amherst College. And the rest apparently is history. So the title of her talk tonight, which I just love, From Amherst with Love, Taking Over the World One Handbag at a Time. Let's welcome Sungju Kim. Thank you.
Hi. In fact, I just saw this poster hanging out there in the John's Chapel. I just collected. I know my daughter designed it. Thank you for that. And also for the sexy title, Taking Over the World One Hand at a Time. Thank you for that. In fact, as I mentioned during the dinner, my body clock is still like somewhere about, 13, 14 hours different, so I'm not that coherent. And there was 4 days ago, I was in Beijing and opening big stores and several hundred people I had to host and take an airplane and just hop over Seoul, pick up my luggage and arrived 12:30 in the morning of a Saturday. So I'm not quite here yet in my brain-wise. Anyway, I'm here not because I'm anything great, just I'm here to share with you how Amherst grew me until now. Because without Amherst education, because the time I arrived, 1979, as a transfer student, some heard already over the dinner, I really did not have English, just only really basic grammar. So I thought Amherst made a mistake to accept me by that time already. But anyway, overcoming all these cultural differences and also learning new languages and also competing in one of the high echelon college like Amherst, it was tough. You can imagine you yourself arrive Moscow, Beijing, or Johannesburg, whatever, with having just very few local language and adjusting. I think it must be very tough. That was my situation. So I shared such a funny story at the Ballantine Dorm, my first dorm, sharing co-ed showroom. That was another kind of experience. One thing true is I didn't tell my parents. If they knew, they would have brought me back next day. Anyway, so since you know pretty much my personal background and go back too much, but one thing true is, I was not encouraged. That's the most important part, because I was a girl, came from big family, and only my duty was getting married through the matchmaking, another big family. Therefore, you know, coming to Amherst was courage. How I got introduced, because Amherst is not known in Korea or Asia in general, but luckily one of my longest and best friend from elementary school, her father was the first Amherst graduate in 1961, Mr. Lee Gyeong. He was really strongly urged, this is one college you cannot miss. But that time, 1979, I was already graduating from Korean university, so do I need another BA? But I think I made the right choice. I think really, without Amherst, really, as I said, I cannot be here tonight like this way, you know. So, also talking about a little bit of my business background. In fact, before I came up, my daughter said, don't say, Mom, all these things about you are doing. But a little bit of brief, I was going to show you some corporate video, but my daughter say, abandon those corporate propaganda, so I didn't prepare it. But you might know what I'm doing is, in fact, I'm a fashion retailer, even though my daughter not necessarily always agreeing what I'm wearing. So tonight I thought she put in the title like Amherst with Love, so red color, it symbolizes love. And also I brought my bright red bag or orange red bag. Just try to elaborate the take of the word one bag at a time, of course. So I'm a handbag person. In fact, how I got in fashion retail, this is another thing, because I started actually, my major at Amherst was sociology. And also what to do with the sociology and fashion retailing. In fact, after Amherst, I went to actually London, London School of Economics for further studies in international relations, international politics and economics. Until that time, my parents or our Korean society never encouraged women can do business, especially girl comes such a family background. Therefore, I never thought I would be a good business person. So often our self-perception and dominated by how family sets you in, not exactly what you are. So that was my situation. So I thought maximum I can do is escaping from home and maybe working for international organization. So that's what I started international relations in London. And then I tried to apply for United Nations GATT, ILO, and all those stuff. They didn't accept me because not because I was not qualified, because until beginning of the 80s, Korea was not full member of United Nations because of North-South Korean division. So I kicked that. So what should I do with all my background? So I returned to Korea. My parents were widely welcoming. Why? Because finally I got my old and a Miss Girl come back, so we should matchmaking her to get married under the big family. So there was like many, many matchmaking meetings lined up, so I had to escape again. So luckily that time, my second sister and third brother were studying at Harvard. That's why I escaped to Harvard, and where I met my daughter's father there. So he was kind of a humble background, not necessarily a wealthy background. He was a non-Korean, so on. And when I fixed my marriage without my parents' approval, don't follow this example though. Anyway, but that time I was no other choice because my parents tried to really fixing the marriage without really my consent. So that was the only way I could escape. So next day I thrown out. Really, they pulled my name out of a family tree. So that was the beginning of my real story because, at my hands, I was less than $1,000 at hand. Therefore, only choice was just a dropout from school supporting my husband that time. So my first job happened to be working at Bloomingdale's in New York as a fashion retailing kind of entry level. Well, nothing to do with the sociology, nothing to do with international relations. But one thing, guess what? I think when you have to make life choice, I'm sure you often think, what should I do after graduating? How relevant my major is, don't worry about it. All comes together eventually. That's what I want to say. In fact, my sociology major, working at Bloomingdale was like no choice. I was just only opportunity I could get and earn some money to support my family. However, sociology certainly gave me great framework, analytical skill set to see how the consumer behavior, all these things. And international politics, economics certainly give the great background for running global business now. So everything what you do, it will be relevant to your future career. I want to assure you for that. So the reason I returned Korea after Bloomingdale's 1989 was not because I wanted to go back, but I was so ill because I was so sick. You know, just I never exposed such a stressful level, and as a foreigner, completely alone and discriminated because not only as I'm a foreigner, but I never had any industry knowledge. Therefore, you know, the competition in New York is so high. So I was very odd being there. So, but it was great learning. I would say my training 3 years at Bloomingdale was like a military school training. So even though it was very difficult because every single dollar I have to earn, which I'd never been in that situation in my life, because for instance, the house I brought up in Korea was an old presidential house. You can imagine how big it is. And you know, so many helpers there. I was like a little princess in a little palace. But when I thrown out of home, I was just nothing in the street. And every single penny I had to make by myself. So it was difficult. That's why eventually my health got, you know, damaged. But I think the one thing I would say is if you really want to succeed, I think sometimes it's good to dissociate yourself from your background, whatever it is, good and bad, it doesn't matter. Be yourself and really challenge yourself while you are still young enough to go next level. And for me, those are 3-4 years in Manhattan and working at Bloomingdale's. And later on, when I returned Korea in 1989, and it was right after the Seoul Olympic Games and opened up for the importation business, for luxury business. That's how I got into, you know, fashion retailing and just and also setting up my own company. And that was tough. I wouldn't go in detail because I, you know, no banks want to lend the money because I was a woman. And I had no wealth to put in the guarantor for that. And also, obviously, the environment was very, very chauvinistic. Most of the deals, as I explained to you before, was done through the, you know, if you go Asia, still it is, so China, Korea, Japan, typically. Deals are not done in the office room, you know, in the company, of, you know, the room, just a meeting room. It is done through the evening, when evening means that not only dinner party, second round is geisha party, third round the heavy drinking party, complete drunk, knock off, then you shake hands. That's the way to make. Yeah, I'm not joking. And also, unfortunately, especially retailing industry I was in, and 20 years ago when I started my own business, apart from all this male shopping's way of doing business, but also such a corruption I faced. You know, every single deal to make, unless you bring, we call it a white envelope, under the table, nobody want to talk with me. No buyers want to talk with me. So what should I do? I had to work hard, 10 times harder, and also I had to be 10 times faster, and also I have to be 10 times also smarter than any other competitors. And so, but I built my business quite well, dealing with the Gucci, Sonia keeps saying the wrong, and Marks and Spencer for Korean market. But when the exit business almost doubled every year, 1998, when the Asian financial crisis hit, of course, my company cannot be exception. I lost more than $30 million overnight. Almost the company was in bankruptcy situation. What should I do? You know, it wasn't me. At that time in Korea, I remember more than 30 or 40,000 small medium companies went bankrupt. And also even big conglomerate like Daewoo went bankrupt. So it was enormous damage. And but luckily, the Gucci I was handling, and we were doing one of the fifth largest Gucci in the world, making quite good money. And eventually, Gucci asked us for a joint venture. I thought it was a God-given opportunity. So I did quite an interesting M&A with them. Eventually, I sold Gucci back to Gucci Group. I still remember the exact date, May 1st of 1998. And because it was a historical moment, you can imagine during crisis time, we are in the very, difficult position, I mean, desperate position, either bank company is going down or not. In that regard, you know, being negotiating, negotiating with such an M&A deal, not a favorable position. But luckily, I really prayed to God because it wasn't not just a matter of my company disappear at that moment, But I was really concerned about my employees. That time I already have almost like 400 employees and almost 88 stores. And watch, you know, where they can go. You know, I don't want to throw their families on the street. So I really pray to God for wisdom and strength to deal with that. Luckily, Gucci came for this joint venture. And also I hired one of the probably the top lawyers and also, you know, accountant. We had a very good negotiation, even tough. Eventually, I sold Gucci back to Gucci Group. We got about $27 million back. That's how I rescued my company. But it's not just a matter of how much money I earn out of this M&A. More important thing is when you know when you talk about M&A, always there are two kind of things. One is a tangible asset they deal with, which means like goods and desk and computer and shop fixture, whatever, something you can touch. There's another asset you are dealing with, intangible asset, which is like a commercial right or something, a value add you did to the brand or the company. This is very subjective term how to judge. But when we hand in this tangible asset list to Gucci for the all the due diligence, I would not go into details, but they were quite amazed. The list of the goods were not an accurate amount. What we handed was, I think it was smaller than what they expected. So this can't be. Normally, Asian company, not quite already straight, and especially in that desperate situation, they would exaggerate the numbers. I'm sure they would come up with something, false numbers. So they put in the, that time, Cooper and Librand, one of the top the accounting firm, do the, all the due diligence. 3 times after, they still found the numbers what we asked for was smaller than what they found. So it was completely the other way situation, what they expected. So they came out to ask for help. How come you ask less than what we supposed give to you? So we helped them. You know, there's a, we call the amortization cost. I don't know whether you're familiar with these terminology. It's like when you buy something, what especially like stock, each year there's a certain percentage deduct from the value. This is according to tax system anyway. So since we run that time, the company was quite transparent, and exactly what we handed in was quite correct. So they were wrong, and we were correct. That honesty made it Gucci giving in. So eventually, we got that $27 million back, because at that time, probably they didn't even want to pay any and just disconnect the contract and leave. But luckily, we could make certain right amount to risk my company. So for me, I would say honesty and also transparency matters so much in the critical situation. Don't forget, because many companies in Korea, especially that time, they thought I was foolish. I didn't know how to deal with the buyers, with the geisha parties, no bribing, no kickbacks, no tax cheating. She must be foolish. That's what they thought. But when we faced the real crisis situation, I proved that I was right. So transparency is a true global competitiveness. That's the one thing I want to really emphasize to you guys. So after actually the cleaning out all my debts and losses, company was almost a zero stage in 1989, I remember. And but you know, I told 1999 that time after 1998 the Asian financial crisis. So I told my team, let's have a hope. I remember even we moved to office from nice office to a very small office near the warehouse, a very humble place. You know, the size of this office, very small, tiny. And so the team got really discouraged. But I said, team, let's have hope. Why don't we acquire the brand eventually in 5 years' time? They thought I was absolutely crazy. We just came out of crisis. She talking about acquiring brand in 5 years' time. They thought, well, she simply tried to encourage us to do something. But it wasn't. Actually, 2005, our MCM business, in fact, that time we were licensee of this German luxury brand. And my business grown quite healthily and reached more than like an $80, $90 million business. So we decided to acquire the brand, which we did. First time in Korean history. In fact, many of those conglomerates even could not even imagine this small company could acquire such a size of a business. We did. So since then, actually, my daughter asked him not to elaborate the numbers, but can I? Actually, we are already 5 times bigger from what we started 5-6 years ago. So this year we do about $400 million business, and we are in 30 countries with 600 employees and 15 nationalities and 9 offices around the world, and also extra 200 stores we are supplying in those 30 countries. So it became quite an extensive operation now. I don't say everything we are doing well, but one thing true, so far it worked. So that's another point. You know, you guys got to have a lot of courage that you can make it happen too. But how did I make it? I think this is one point I want to make. Well, a lot of people say, oh, I'm sure she had a lot good, you know, business skill sets. I'm sure she has some tricks. I'm sure she was lucky and all those. But true in the sense that I have a very devoted young team who even never been exposed to global scale, who don't speak much English either. But the one thing I was quite nicely surprised that these young people, when I give proper exposure and opportunity, they take on, they eventually make it. That's hope I have. Even all to you the same. If you happen to come out to Asia to work, I'm sure you're scared by culture, like of a, you know, Asian languages, and also going away from your, you know, family. But you know, I tell you one thing: you have to put yourself in a sense that it's rather risky, certain sense. But you know, unless you challenge to go beyond your boundary, you're never gonna come out to global scale. So really go for it. That's one thing I wanna say. But how did I make it happen? You know, just very simple word: I'm not money driven. Even I do make company make good money, and we do grow 30%. Every year, and we have quite an ambitious plan next 5 years. Probably we'll open another 100 stores in China alone. The company is going to be very good, sizable company. We can even challenge the biggest giants like LV and Gucci will be eventually. That's what our aim. So aim is not small, but it's not mad level you want to make a multi-billion dollar company. Maybe eventually come. But the more important thing is I'm not money driven. I'm very mission driven. So mission, what kind of mission do I have? 3 missions I have through my life. One, because my background, even came from good family, good education, because the only reason I was a girl, therefore I was heavily discriminated. My 3 brothers inherit multi-billion dollars company from my father when he passed away. As a girl, especially me, rebel against the family tradition, thrown out the street. Therefore, I didn't have any wealth from my parents, but I built my myself. So through doing so, my first mission became, how can I prove girl can be as good as a boys? Why even better than boys sometimes? So it's not a matter of how big company I'm growing. More important thing is that I can awaken half a population who are women in Korea, or in Asia in general, and now even globally. How can I prove it? Girl, what women can do as good as a boy or man. You know, became one of my first mission. I think I'm achieving it, right? So even like beginning of May, after this trip, I'm going to Europe, and I'm gonna attend one of the largest women's conference called the Global Summit of Women. I'll be one of the Asian representative speaker. And again, I can really prove to those ladies who are there to share not only their know-hows, whatever, but most important is encouraging one another. Yes, we made it through. So this is a really amazing. For me, it's not just girls' issue. It's a really most critical economic issue. If we cannot integrate the half of population brain power, which is good brain power, I think that there's no future of any economy. So that's my point. Second mission, what it was, is as I mentioned before, you know, fighting against corruption. Because when I engage in actually Korean society at the beginning, any fast-growing economies around the world now, Russia, China, even Korea typically, because when they have a very short period of a very impactful, very intensive economic growth or materialistic growth, the value system becomes so much material-oriented, money-oriented, who gets what, how much they have, that sets new social status. Therefore, they will do anything in the sake of making money. Therefore, where the corruption comes in. So I remember even Korea, why double-digit economy, such a Korean economy, double-digit growth economy, one of the 12th largest economy, 8th largest trading country, almost went moratorium. Why is that? 1998. So analysts say, yes, backwardness of banking system, inward-looking, slush fund scandal with the governments, all these conglomerates, so on, so on, so on. But I think for me, fundamentally, there was a lack of utilization of women in the society. That's what I figured out. But going back to this fighting against corruption, when I started, really, as I mentioned, I could not even move any one step you know, putting into the one of the highest productivity area department stores or duty-free areas where we should locate our shops. No way to obtain any footage there without bribing. It was like a common norm that time. But I thought, I came back home now, and at the time I thought, well, coming from good family, and also coming from good education, especially Amherst education, and also as a Christian to be somebody who has a strong belief system, shall I compromise these common practice, so-called common practice, in the sake of making money, then I can help, or shall I just proceed with a clean hand policy and prove it, that we can succeed with the transparency. It was a much tougher task. I don't know why I took on that mission, but that became my mission. So, okay, why don't I fight for that? I did. It means that, first of all, I feel that you cannot imagine how much they humiliated me. I remember so many guys just tried to possibly put me down to just discourage me and things like that, because they just cannot possibly to see this transparent company not bribing to them succeed in their industry. And secondly, also, I thought, what would be also a good way to win them over, apart from working harder than them? So part of that was really, as I said before in another class, that, brought in the IT system. So we are fast and accurate, and also we set our own rule game there. And that was the second mission. But as you said, through the crisis, we've clearly proved that we could succeed. Meanwhile, so many companies went bankrupt in sudden. We earned $27 million back, risking my company. Now we are here, we are. So that's a small good example I made for future generations. The third mission I'm carrying now is, in fact, as a small medium company, coming from Asia or even from Europe, whatever, even from America, whether they can succeed in global scale. Because as you know, this big global market we are facing, because we are living in a very globalized world, because out of the internet connectivity, everything is online, everything's on time, and everything is B2B, B2C, e-commerce, m-commerce. It's just chaotic, but it's just expanding ever. So we already, even we live in certain country as a certain background, but we already live in very much so in globalized world. Probably you know YouTube and Facebook, you do experience every day. So how this small medium company can succeed competing with a multinational corporation who are like 10, 20, 30, $100 billion, who has all the management infra, the best IT system, the best human resource possible, and big money? How can I compete with that? So I'm proving it. In fact, probably you will see in 5 years. But in Korea, for example, actually, MCM is already second largest after LV. We are far bigger than Chanel and Gucci, can you imagine? And also another interesting is now even China is a kind of virgin market for us, because even Shanghai, Beijing, and Hong Kong, now Macau, yes, it's pretty mature market. Beside all the second tier cities and third tier cities, still virgin market. For instance, I was in Chongqing, one of very middle city, middle of China. And I was invited as a speaker at one of the conference there. And I was amazed to see the scale. One little city had a 30 million population. And more than 50, 70, 100 storage building everywhere, even it's half empty, but it all built within last 5-7 years time. Can you imagine? But still there's a social infra was not there yet. So still like a 4-lane street, the car street, and meanwhile, those high rising, so all the cars just virtually just stop at parking lot. So I had to run around the city. But anyway, so just for me, it was wow, this is an opportune land, because we are not as big as LV, Gucci, or this Chanel. However, these people never exposed to Western culture or Western civilization, not more than 3, 5, 7 years. Then it's who goes first and promote yourself well and provide suitable good and service, there will be the winner. So I saw the hope there. So that's why I decided to open 100 stores next 5 years. Very little goal, right? So you can imagine next 5 years, Korea and China, even two countries put together, probably will target for, can I say, GA? $1 billion revenue. So we are already at more than $400 million revenue. So I'm not really here to showing off. That's one thing I want to emphasize. I just want to, you know, just to share with you that as a small medium company, you may start, while you may be involved after college, you can do it too. That's why I want to witness. Okay, have courage. Another matter I want to just say, little coming back to macro view, I was in Davos, World Economic Forum, about a few months ago. You know, World Economic Forum in near Zurich. Yes, all the big guys are meeting. In fact, until 1997, I was chosen as one of the global leaders. I don't know why, another mistake they made. I had no idea what was World Economic Forum. I never applied for it. So I remember when one of the biggest newspapers called me, did you receive some notice? I said, no. They said, well, you are chosen as a global leader. Come over. So they published a big newspaper full-page article about me because I was the first Korean woman ever selected as one of the global leaders there. And so I was so scared that my father would see it next day because it was the biggest economic newspaper. He may have a heart attack. So I had to call him very early morning, make sure the father, when you open that newspaper, yes. So, and you will see me big picture and full page article of me, don't get surprised. He said that he was already mad enough the fact that his youngest daughter is going to be full page in main economic journal there. You know what he said? You must have done something wrong. So they perceived wrongly about you. And second, he said that you are not good as they think about. So wake up. So he hung up. That's the way, because many treasure man's point, even I dearly love my father. He was truly great business leader in Korea. But he was very Confucius gentleman. In his mind, women cannot be in that level unless she's absolutely insane or something wrong, you know. So it was the kind of environment I brought up, but not that point I want to make. I learned some mega trend going on in this world out of Davos this time. There are three, very simple. The first mega trend I would say is truly the economic center shift from west to east. Not because I'm saying it because I come from east. Because out of this banking crisis, maybe America made too many wars in meanwhile. Just to, you know, and also these investment bankers with the greed, they just destroyed this world, unfortunately. Europe the same. You know, you hear every day what's going on. I was really sad to hear even like an S&P lowered even, you know, the level of American economy, you know, one step lower. I think this is great pity because you live in such a great country. But what I want to say is that economic center shifting to Asia, this is what is an opportune place for you. Not scared by that. It is great time for you to pursue. That's why I want to emphasize. So why East? Why Asia? Because first of all, 2/3 of the total population living in Asia now. And also China alone, they are experiencing 10% economic GDP growth every year. They're already bigger than Japan, second largest after America. Many economists predict that 10 years time, even China would be bigger than America. Well, about this issue, everybody got scared about it, including myself, because Korea is next to China. So for me, my recommendation is really, instead being scared off, you guys should go out there. So, you know, I really strongly recommend many Amherst kids, you know, junior year abroad or summer school internship, go to Asia, learn about it. Like me, I did 30 years ago. If I didn't bravely coming out this way to West to learn about new language and culture and take risk and overcome it, I wouldn't be here today. Right? So you do. You are much younger than me. You are more braver than me, and you are better equipped than me. You should go for East to learn. I think that's true globalizing procedure anyway. Right? When I was sitting, actually, one economist in a British newspaper group conference in London, and they say, oh, there's a new, not contract, what they say was a reverse imperialism happening. I said, what they're talking about? Well, when West conquered the East, they don't talk about it, but suddenly Eastern countries or companies started taking over some Western companies, they think this is a reverse imperialism. So I said, you guys, it's not just a matter of who gets what, it is globalizing process. The true globalization is not East gets West, West gets East. No, East meet West equally. That's what true globalization about. It means that both sides equally responsible but need to have a better understanding, sharing common values, really setting up the win-win situation, whatever regards from politics, military, or economic, you know, level, any levels. That's so you should be bridge for that. Second mega trend, what I learned from Davos was really now it's no more top-down, everything is bottom-up. It means that all these young generation, I think a typical case, two examples I want to say. One is a recent one, Egyptian case. Who on earth would imagine this most traditional, well-set-up country like Egypt? I went to Egypt with my daughter. It was an amazing country with an amazing heritage. But it could be revolutionized, only even didn't take 1 year, a few months. Now new government setting, new system. It's amazing how it happened. Because this young generation exposed to the outside world through the internet connectivity, hey, we live in dictators, we live in such a wrong, you know, values, why is that? Let's go for something better one. So they connect through the Twitters, whatever. So eventually formulate enormous new voice, collective power. This young generation can do it. They change the whole course of their nation. Now happening in Libya, it will happen in Yemen, will happen in the Jordan. It's like a domino effect. Every single government, every single kind of nation around the world, not only Middle East, it will happen in the United States, it's happening in Asia too. And you guys will change the world. So it's not top-down anymore, not by government ruling over people. Now individuals come together, they will command on the future. That's why exactly you have to take on the leadership for that. Even look at the Facebook, you know the story better than me. Who on earth would think this young Harvard dropout student, out of being rejected by his girlfriend, started such a funny site called Facebook, and now within how many, even not even taking 10 years, 6 years old, 7 years old, right? Now you know what the value of this company? Do you know, Josh? In the stock market, the value is $55 billion, bigger than any other IT companies who has much longer history, you can imagine. This is a new era you live in. So when you have a great, creative, smart idea, one individual can reverse whole nature of the industry. That's the era you live in. So it's not top-down, it is bottom-up, don't forget, okay? Third mega trend I learned from Davos was, maybe some male colleagues would not like it, but it's a real truly becoming from patriarchal society, matriarchal society. Doesn't mean we're gonna discriminate you guys. Women cannot live without men, right? Well, it's not exactly women will dominate. I think it is the nature of business or nature of the whole world changed so much out of the internet revolution. It means that now, as I mentioned before, most of things done through virtual reality. Virtual reality, when you go in, they don't discriminate men and women. They require certain very specific brain power, which is not only just a high intelligence, high grade, and muscle power, which required in the kind of manufacturing era. Now we live in the knowledge-based era, requires only great intelligence, which is we call it emotional intelligence. Why is that? Because when you deal with a B2B, B2C business in virtual reality, beyond any physical and time boundaries, you have to have an enormous intuitive power to recognize whom you are dealing with. Very multicultural environment, very uncertain, without knowing who you are dealing with, but you got to have gut and you got to have that intuitive power to recognize, deal with these issues. That actually requires emotional intelligence that women possess. It doesn't mean women's quality is better than men. I think men has different strengths, women has another different strengths. We need to collaborate together equally. That's what I want to say. So it's not exactly moving the whole social system will be from matriarchal to patriarchal to matriarchal, but I think any even man can have a very feminine, quality, or feminine eyes. Not just even feminine eyes, just more emotional intelligence. That, you know, I think anybody can succeed. So because it's mostly the contents matters, not the hardware matters anymore. So these are
even like even women's leadership, I saw Merkel, you know, Chancellor Merkel at the podium at Davos besides Sarkozy. Sarkozy was a joke to me. You know what I mean? Even Berlusconi, we don't even talk about it. But Merkel, she just walked in, very humble dress and very humbly baby, but so sure and certain and clear and determined to deliver. I loved her. You know, she was the only statement I could trust in. That's what I saw. There was something, women's quality, I saw it. At the lunchtime, the class, at the gender labor class, we share a little bit. It does mean women has all the time strengths. Yes, we do have a strength, like we are good multitasking, also we are very caring horizontally, so we are not like a top-down relationship. And also we are very intuitive, as I mentioned. Also we have a motherhood, which is great nature, to care for your employees and care for the society. That's what we willing to stand up often for the really justice and for, you know, more ethical standing. But also we women has a great weaknesses too, because we are emotional being, we are easily challenged. So I saw so many of my employees, you know, because out of 600 people, we have 90% are women. And also top level, the directors out of six, four of them are women. And they are not less paid, they are better paid. So, but I don't discriminate men either, but it's just anyway, so I want just to emphasize that women has a great, I mean, really a capacity to go for. But one thing I want to emphasize that, you know, growing all these women around me, when I train them enough, not time to return something back to the company, they leave. I said, why do you leave? They crying, oh, my health issues, my kid doesn't study well, and my mother-in-law say something, my husband hated it. They make a million kind of excuses why they leave that position. I was so disappointed. Why their endurance level is so low, and why their, you know, just loyalty toward the, you know, job is so weak, because they are so much emotional beings. So I often say emotion is a great quality for the emotional intelligence, but emotion without discipline, this is the biggest enemy to yourself, right? And also many other weaknesses we have women, just a team leadership, you know. That's one thing I admire men with doing a lot of sports, because first of all, without having your fit body, you cannot endure the stress level you are gonna go through as a leader. And also through doing team sports, I think you learn great teamwork, but women often are not good at it. When they're dedicated for certain tasks, they deliver very well, but when they have to deal with the team issues, I don't think they are always excellent. So women are good in the self-oriented kind of work, but not leading the team. So that's what, you know, I emphasize women sometimes should go military service. In Korea, in fact, the military service for men is compulsory. So last year when I was giving a small lecture at the big business group, which are mostly men, but I said, well, why instead of sending men military service for 3 years, why don't you send them 1 year? And also giving maybe some also professional military service, so some of those unemployed people can, you know, also earn money out of that. But meanwhile, what do you do? Not compulsory, but optional for women to go military. Only reason why? Because, you know, the business or real world we are going to live in, you are going to pursue, is like a war zone. It's not pink, mood, a really nice romantic place anymore. It means that you have to really like almost like warriors there. If you're not really trained to how to deal with your own emotion, how to deal with your own health, how to deal with a team leadership, you're not going to win. So I must say, even though the era emerged now out of this internet-based and the revolutionary knowledge-based economy requires women's brain power, women's capacity. However, if you don't discipline, you are going to be useless there. That's one thing I want to say. So in this, all the things happening in this world, what Amherst men and women can do? You know, this is one thing I want to just make the last part, and then I will just open for the, you know, just question. You know, just pretty disaster what we look around from the environment issues, political and military, just very gloomy. And I said before, actually, even the dinner time people are coming over, you know, one thing I learned from Amherst is true leadership, not just the knowledge, not only physical, you know, endurance level through the physical education. But most important thing I learned was a moral ethical education. You know, we all pursue our maximum best through our life. But when you don't have certain goal, you know, it's just, am I going to just be like president or most popular guy, most wealthiest guy, most famous person? No, that's only for me. It's like a tool, vehicle to do something. If you don't have a really ultimate goal, how to serve society, out of all these privileges you have, I think that it could end up in vain. I saw so many people achieved it, but defeated by that, destroyed by that. So that's what I think this is spirit of Amherst. You know, that's what Amherst teach you. You are not here to pursue your own success. I think you are really here to serve the society out of your success. That's how I want to end up. Thank you very much. Okay, I'm open for any crazy questions. I'm ready for that. Go for it. Yes? Can you say it loudly? Yes?
I have two questions.
Yeah.
And one is, you said when you enter Bloomingdale, you have no choice.
Yeah.
And then my question is, but you have something that you like, that what kind of people you want to be, or like you have role
model? Yeah. Okay. Let's get. Good question. Probably everybody has a similar question. What kind of role model you would imagine around the age you, like yourself? Well, it's sometimes really unfair question to any young individual what you wanted to do. So why are you pursuing this major? Probably 9 out of 10 would not answer quite correctly what exactly. What that's a very normal, natural. Even me, I didn't know that either. But one thing you have to be very attentive is listening your heart. Because, when you have many different subjects in our elementary, junior high school, there are certain subjects, even you don't work hard or you don't, your mom doesn't even force you to study hard, you exceed. But certain subjects, absolutely you hate, right? So it means that your talent, your strength is already there. So that, think about it. And also, secondly, as I mentioned before, whatever even major you do, even whatever, even professional experience you do, eventually it will come together. If you have an ultimate goal, you want to really serve out of something, doing a good job. So don't worry about it. But for me, my case, because I think I was very good in art, but also at the same time, I inherited my father's business blood. I remember before my father passed away, until a certain moment, he denied his youngest daughter has business got to, something from him. But before he died, he admitted that, why you have most of my business blood, not your brother's, unfortunately. That's what he said. So I said, Father, don't worry. I'll be as good as my brothers, or even better than them. Eventually, I will prove that. So I think when the artistic sense and business blood coming together, I think eventually ended up doing fashion retailing, even though I'm not designer. But, it's just visually it's pleasing me, and I'm very good in visual things. And also, at the same time, very rational, how to analyze, put it together, the strategy to pursue to be the top of that industry. So that's what I want to say. Other question, yes? Some boys, yes? Great.
You said that you started the business with very difficult business and not giving out the rights. So could you tell us that, because it's easy, where you see that now, but could you tell us live an experience whereby, because sometimes at some point it's probably going to cost you.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
how to fight against corruption. I should write another big 1,000-page booklet. Really, there's just something, an enormous challenge I face, from the personal humiliation to even some of our shops shut down, many of our goods being stolen, and all my teams are really persecuted very badly treated. Just endless things, I want to say. I don't know, just elaborate all these embarrassing experiences I had in Korean industry. However, I stood up, and it means that you know, determined to not only succeed, but determined to even willing to take a sacrifice. So many deals were almost impossible. I remember one of those shops, we finally got very precious site. We had all the interior design, and almost going into construction. They said, well, it's not yours anymore, because the other company who bribed took it away. That kind of things. Even like in duty free, I remember at the airport, we had also shops there. And always the light is off. So I scored my team, how lazy you are. Even light is off. Why you didn't fix it? They cried. I said, why? Every evening they come and cut the electricity light at the line away. Or even like our stocks stolen because we didn't bribe. So they took it away as a just forced bribing. All kinds of things. But so a few times I was almost going to give up because I just cannot stand this. It was so unjust and so unfair and also just too difficult for me to deal with. Even one of my employees came, come on, you know, this is common practice. You just give a few $1,000. It's not even big money, but we can make a $1 million account. Why is economic? It is viable. Why don't you do it? I told that guy that if you say once more like that, next to your desk, it will not be there. It's for me, it's not a matter of compromise or choice. For me, whether if I have to compromise, I'd rather shut down my company at once, looking after my daughter better. So that was my, so because, you know, as an intellectual, as a person like us, to get such a privilege, you know, somebody got to stand up. Who is going to crack that? So yes, it will require a lot of sacrifice, I guarantee you for that. But reward was far bigger. Eventually, we earn not only respect for our industry, because we just showed them we were so successful without bribing. Because as I said, that means that we'd have the more diligence, 10 times more diligence, it means that our capacity growing better. And also without bribing, I mean, those money we saved, we utilized much more nicely educating our team, training them, and also better welfare system and providing better service for our, you know, the customers. And also, as I said, installing the IT system faster. Now we have SAP, so we are much faster and accurate. So we just were ahead of game, and we just set different rule game to win this corrupted situation. So now since we set this a good example, so many companies start to follow. It's amazing. So one really moving kind of experience, just about 10 days ago, one of the biggest retailing group called Lotte. I remember it was the biggest one, but that time they were a very corrupted one. And they almost tried to kick me out of this industry because they just cannot stand as one example being set up without bribing so successful. But, you know, now all those guys who are so brutally treat me all gone. I don't think these unjust guys can stay longer. And all these honest ones came up at the top level. And 10 days ago when they opened their Lotte, some special, they called it history museum for the, showing their history. And they invite me out of their 100,000 vendors, suppliers. I was there next to chairpins cutting the ribbon. I was almost tear, you know? So it's just your good job will be rewarded. God will reward you, and eventually customer will reward you because, you know, what is the best for marketing? You know, spending million dollars putting on ads and PR and, you know, the celebrity endorsement and the online marketing, all tricks you can do. But eventually earning trust from your consumer, that's the best. That's what we got. Any question?
Yeah. 안녕하세요.
안녕하세요.
Great. Yes.
I am a retailer, small scale retailer.
Okay.
So far, and I import from both Korea and Japan.
Okay.
And I'm curious about one of the things that I've found is that in some ways Japan is easier to access through organizations like
that's
Jetro.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Jetro.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Coming to Japan last fall to meet mm-hmm. vendors.
Exactly.
And mm-hmm. part of it, I think, is language embarrassment. They feel like they should have better
mm-hmm.
English.
Mm-hmm.
Or, and how can I, as a North
yeah.
American
yeah.
retailer, bridge
yeah.
that gap of
okay.
Korean vendors?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, sorry to hear that you had a much tougher time. You're right. Japanese are more organized in that regard, more advanced than Korea. But probably, you know, if you go in these days, the KOTRA, which is a Korea trade promotional things like Jetro.
I think you can get a lot of night access because Korea is now highest IT infra in the world. So you can really find many of those companies relevant you want to access, and you can go direct through the, even the internet website connection. Okay, any other question? I know you are having the final soon, so okay, sure, go ahead. You want to be my writer? Then I can offer you. In fact, I wrote one book 10 years ago, maybe more than 10 years ago, when during the Asian financial crisis, 1998. And I thought, you know, actually, I didn't intend to write a book. I happened to feature it on TV. And apparently that program just became best well-reviewed. And then every single, actually, the publication company approached me to write a book, I refused. But the one publication company, they were so clever, they knew why I refused, because I thought, first of all, I'm middle of a crisis that time. Secondly, I haven't succeeded enough to do something writing about it. But they said, well, I watched your TV program, and you said something very important word, which is noblesse oblige. So it doesn't mean noblesse oblige only like somebody who has money, but power, knowledge, good experience, whatever. You have a noblesse oblige to share how you made it through. So I called up by this publication company. So I wrote a book called, the real title was Wake Up Call. You know, really it was one of the most self-critical book against Korean society, from the corruption scale, male chauvinism, a lot of inward looking, etc., etc. But that was about now more than now 12 years ago. So yeah, maybe why not? Just wonder if, but it's a matter of timing. Yeah, I'm just too busy. But one day I would do it. Yeah. Another question? Yeah, Josh. Right. Well, Josh, it's a tough question. I ask you not to ask that. No, I'm just joking. In fact, yeah, it's a very good question. Yes, you know, like me, someone's luckily, even though he was, my father was heavily discriminating, but I had business blood from him. Eventually, that's what I discovered, and he discovered too. But I didn't know until, you know, last minute. And so I had a great education for Amherst, but how would you pursue your future entrepreneurship and what, in a future career? I think that's what you are asking. I think there's two type of people, usually business book says, as I said, actually, during the lunch time. One is somebody who's like initiated like me, you know, just I just always breaking ground and taking new, you know, task and new job, and a new kind of, a, you know, the business or new opportunities I am pursuing. But there's another type of people is that they are very good, we call it a follower leadership, who follow this initiator to, you know, bring, make it happen. So in business books say, who are more important? Both are equally important. For me, this follower leadership is even more important, because even if you need something, if you don't follow, nothing is gonna happen, or would go something very wrong. So Josh, I would say that entrepreneurship, I mean, anybody can have it, but I say you have to judge on or analyze yourself very honestly. Am I good initiator? Or am I just a good or so follower leadership? I think you have to determine. Both are very, very important. But the one thing I would say is, even you are gonna be good followership, while you are young like this, you should take risk. Just go for it. Even small business, you can do it out of your kitchen, you know, your desk. You know, now eBay and Google, everything is available. You just, you can do anything. Even like a video making, I think you guys made it, Marchas recently did a video exhibition. I mean, you can even deal with those small video contents, even sell to somebody, and you can be famous artist, you never know. So don't be shy or don't be passive until somebody come and recognize your talent. Never gonna happen. That's one thing I assure you. You have to really just show up, not really just, but you have to analyze where you can put yourself most competitive edge, whatever environment you go in, and but tenaciously pursue it until people recognize you. So that's what I want to emphasize, right? There's another lady. Yes, sure.
Thank you again for the
inspiring
stories. I really appreciate the work that you're sharing. And I'm curious if there's
That's the toughest question to answer, especially in front of my daughter. Because she got the truth. I cannot lie. Yeah, two things I want to say. Obviously, yes, it is difficult for women. I don't deny that. Because we often say women should be 3 times stronger than men, juggling in a professional life and dealing with the household and rearing the children, right? So we have to have a 3 times more efficiency, even time management. Meanwhile, we have to change our heels and clothing, putting on makeup and hairdo. My God, I don't know what to do. I remember when Gia was very young, my daughter, I was putting on some makeup. She came, Mom, why don't you put on mascara and all this foundation? I look at her. She said, if I am as pretty as you are, I don't do it. But anyway, unfortunately, I'm in the fashion industry. I have to look always neat. That's the problem. So obviously, so I often think, oh my God, if I were a man, in this hour, I would do more exercise. In this hour, I would do more relaxation, right? Or in this hour, I would do more training. Why women should be bothered all these things? But that's true. Women have a certain, now I don't say handicap, but difficult to deal with their lives, which is given. But I think, you know, I think few solutions. One is now future generations, I can see there's no men and women difference in household responsibility, even child rearing. You know, and also I think that the women, and also luckily this knowledge-based economy enable any women to even have a flexible hours. And there's a lot of job now even you can do out of your own home, still breastfeeding your children. So very lucky generation, I must say. So not the same situation I was coming from. So one funny instant I had my daughter saying, Mom, you're and a mom, a daughter like mother, I'm mother like daughter. No, mother like daughter. So it happened before even I walk in. She said, Mom, don't say this, don't say that. You know, it was like a worse. Now she started getting mad, sorry. But, you know, so Molly just said, well, don't worry, your daughter's a worst critic, at the best ally through life, right? So it's true. Anyway, so work and not only professional balance, but more so even health balance is very, very critical. So you have to be wise. That's why even me between lunchtime and 3 o'clock, 5 o'clock, whatever, I was in the gym running. And luckily, Nick, the swimming coach, let me in doing some swimming. Meanwhile, all these athletes were doing their own exercise. So you have to be super diligent for that. But I think you can make through without problem. Yeah. Another question? Oh, oops, daughter, are you allowed? Okay. You know everything about me better than me, yeah. Well, I think that's a good practical question. In fact, I think it's absolutely important. But actually, last night, yesterday, luncheon with some group of GS friends around the table, saying very interesting thing. Amherst students are super bright. They are so good in saying and writing, but in action, sometimes not as good. I think it means something, right? So in that regard, I think I strongly really recommend put yourself in real experience as much possible. For instance, actually, my daughter, going back to your story, when she was 7 years old, she was already in warehouse carrying boxes. 9 years old, she was already retailing in a space, retailing in at the store. And 11 years old or something, I already sent her to Calcutta in a mission field in the really helping the poor people. Last year, was it, in the Kenya, she went for the mission trip. You know, it just, I'm not showing off anything. It's just apart from also some, you were, I think, 15, 16 years old, I think she was already in some law firm shredding the papers. And also another year, she was 17 years old, so I think it was she were in the investment bank. I just exemplify What I want to say is really put yourself as much possible in real life, in early stage. That's what I want to recommend. Because I remember when I was at Harvard briefly, I was not in business school, so I took some courses there, and it was really suited me. Until that time, I didn't know I would do business because I was complete brainwashed by my parents that women cannot do business. But it was so interesting. So I went back to the professor that I think I should change my course to Harvard Business for pursuing MBA. But that professor made something very interesting remark. In fact, he was at that time Amherst graduate too. He said, even he just saw me in classroom a few times. He became editor of Harvard Business Review. He looked at me and said, hey, you're a kind person who's not pursue MBA. Just go out immediately, pursue your own business, whatever you like to do. And maybe 10 years time, you would hire many MBAs possible. And maybe another 10 years time, your business will be Harvard's case study book. But that came out true. Now actually Harvard Business School is writing a case study in my company now already. So he said a very interesting remark. Real business is not in textbook. Okay, is there maybe one more question that we can add? Sure, is there any other? Even, yeah.
This one is probably a little bit crazy, but your talk is both very obsessively about
Information
and technology revolution.
Yep.
And I was just recently reading a book by Andrew Chung, the economist at Cambridge University.
Yep.
And well, in his judgment, he said that the human race tend to overestimate the most recent technological advancements.
Yep.
Well, actually, it's an interesting comment you probably heard, so I don't have to repeat. But that's true in a sense that we should not overestimate the benefit of technology. It's quite contrary. Often it really harming humanity. Because some ways I envy you guys. Like my daughter always teaching, Mom, you're so terrible with the technology, even though I use all these. But I often say to her, you are born with a computer. We are the immigrant. Right? Because I remember my graduate school time, first time the Apple computer came out, even we did not have a PC, so I have to go to the computer center, line up waiting for the one computer available for writing my thesis. That was the situation. So, one way, yes, I envy you guys got to expose so many indiscriminate information flow everywhere around the world. But the other way, I am really sympathetic with you guys. Because you lose your value system. Because just so many information coming without screening, one side is a great benefit, but the other side, such a disturbance is in your life. That's what I see. So, and another comment you just made, something very interesting, inventing better washing machine, that's true. Not only relieving the women's life easier, but I think men's life easier too. Because the era we live in, I would say, reiterate this new era, is a women's revolution era and men's liberation era. It means that we are liberating men from stereotypy. It means that when you go in fashion field, not only fashion world, now if you like a Paul Smith or even Ralph Lauren Polo, go and a man start to wear pink, yellow, and flowers, and rainbow. Now it's time to men need to be prettier to women. Don't forget, okay? It means that all the household work we do it, we should equally share. It's not women's job anymore. That's why I want to warn you. But I would just make some maybe last brief remark out of your comments. I think it's true. I mean, really, as I said, out of this internet and technology revolution, you truly live in already very, very globalized world, one world. One connected global community, but unfortunately, we are still very much brainwashed by our own national state, sovereignty,
and our own medias, wrong medias, and saying, oh, you're American, you're Korean, you're Chinese, you're the best, others bad, evil. No, we are the same humankind. So what I see is really, as I said, the spirit of Amherst is not just go for your own personal success, not just serve your own society, America. I think you are really having this privilege really to improve better world for the future. But to do so, first of all, you got to have a real strong spiritual power to discern that. And throughout my prayer, I get so much inspiration discerning kind of a capacity. That's I must confess. Because also I don't pursue my own short for interest. Therefore, I didn't caught up by all these challenges fighting against corruptions. I could easily give in, right? And also standing as a woman, I could easily give in. But I know it's not only for myself, for the society. That's why I had the courage to stand up. So more important is, as I said, all the knowledge you get, equally, even more so, you need to have a more ethical ground. Without, you can be even more dangerous than any other beings. So you take on this responsibility with courage and with joy. Thank you very much.